2022-0782, in the matter of State of Ohio versus Michael Schilling. Sitting with us today in place of Justice Dieters is Judge Mark Miller from the 3rd District Court of Appeals. Good morning, Judge. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice.
For the appellant, Mr. Lee.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice.
Good morning.
Good to be here, Justices. Feels like old home week when I see Justice DeWine and Justice Pischer. It's sort of like 2014 all over again. So,
we're sorry.
Did you hear that? Justice Stewart said she's sorry.
I was wondering if they were just sitting back, preparing, thinking, should we go back a few years and attack now? Or whatever. You know how this works. So, we are here before the court today on, there's no other way to put it except for the latest skirmish in the eternal battle between Senate Bill 5, sex offender classifications, and Senate Bill 10, Adam Walsh, sex offender classifications. What we have before the court is really a simple proposition of law, is that does State v. Henderson supersede the entire line of cases from this court, going back, frankly, to 2011 with Williams, I think Grant was the last in 2018, that said and made it clear, we have two classification schemes in the state of Ohio.
So your friend on the other side says that State v. Henderson is not an issue because this isn't part of the sentence at all, which doesn't look like it's part of the sentence to me. What's wrong with that view?
There's nothing wrong with that, Your Honor. That's absolutely the view we take. Because what we've got, though, is we've got the 1st District and the 11th District that are opposed to what the 12th has said. We firmly believe in State v. Jones that the 12th District got it right. It is not part of a sentence. It's not a component of the sentence at all that should be considered. It is civil and remedial. And it's not part of the sentence. I mean, it attaches by operation of law in Mr. Schilling's case.
So then you would agree that that under Megan's law, then Megan's law applies and he's done registering and it's over?
Absolutely. That's it, Your Honor. He is a Megan's law offender. I think that ends the discussion right there.
Well, then, it's been 10 years, so why are we here then?
No, that's not the other issue. He never registered in Ohio until 2019.
But he wasn't required to register. He didn't live here, right?
Correct. And so that's the question. He was a Kentucky resident.
So he registered the state where he was. He did it for 10 years. That seems like
there's a specific statute, 2950-07E, that gives guidance as to when the sheriff can credit out-of-state registration. So are we to presuppose that a clock just runs? The minute you're convicted, the clock starts running on your 10-year, 15-year, 25-year, whatever your classification is?
Isn't that kind of what the statute says, I think?
Not really. The 1st District is talking about the notice provisions under 2950-04 and 2950-05. That's, if you pull up a registration form, those are just telling you that you have to go and register somewhere else. They all have their underpinning from federal SORNA. These are just notice provisions. So, for example.
So you're saying it's time told for when he was in Kentucky?
No, it's not told. He's just not registering in Ohio. He has a 10-year duty to register in Ohio. As it turns out, this particular offender.
Even when he's not living in Ohio?
Even when he's not living in Ohio. This is a 10-year duty to register in Ohio.
Where would he register in Ohio when he's not living there?
He would not. So
you just—I thought you just said he had a duty to register in Ohio even when he's not living in Ohio.
No.
So how would he do that?
Under Ohio law, he has a 10-year duty to register while he's in Ohio. In Kentucky, he had a lifetime duty. Under federal SORNA law, he would be a Tier 1 offender with a 15-year duty. So you've got to look at where the offender is. So
yours, what you just said, and if I understood correctly.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying that if he's in Kentucky, he has to register for a lifetime because that's Kentucky.
That's Kentucky law.
But if he ever moves into Ohio, he then has to register and he has a 10-year requirement, even if it's been 25 years since conviction.
Correct. He has that Ohio duty. That's what his duty is under Ohio law.
But you're saying that the clock stops in Ohio once he moves out, and then it restarts when he moves back in.
Mm-hmm. In essence, yes. So, for example,
I wish I could do that for my age. Every time I left the state, I stopped getting older. Time stops.
I understand, Your Honor. But he's not registering pursuant to Ohio law in Kentucky. Or, and now it's not part of the record, when Mr. Schilling, we convicted him last year on a registration violation, when he went to Florida and never registered down there, does he get the benefit of Ohio registering time when he is in another state and he doesn't register at all? So if you adopt the First District's reasoning on this, that a clock just sits here and runs the minute that either A, you're released from prison, or if you're put on probation, which is a triggering time for Ohio registration, then where are we?
So he was required to register for 10 years where he lived, and he did that, right?
He was registered for life where he lived.
Well, under his Ohio duties, his Ohio duties required him to register where he lived for 10 years, and he did exactly that, right?
Well, that hasn't been presented to the court. There's been no evidence that that occurred. See, that's the issue with 2950.07e. There's a mechanism that discusses how and when a sheriff is to verify and...
But that only applies when... That applies to... And that applies to someone who committed an offense in another state and then moved to Ohio, which is not the situation we have here, right?
Right. So
that statute doesn't have anything to do with this case.
Well, then are we left to assume that the clock just runs and there's nothing the offender owes to the state of Ohio?
Well, isn't the purpose of the registration duties is to let people in the area in which the defendant or the registrant lives to know that, hey, your next-door neighbor has been convicted of a sex offense? If he's not residing near his neighbors in Cincinnati or Cleveland or anywhere else in Ohio, what's the purpose of the statute?
Well,
isn't it to protect Ohio residents?
Well, it is to let everyone know, but you're following that local statute. In Ohio, that would be true. He would be on there listed in the local sheriff's department registry. It would be on the internet. But again, I go back to the proposition I put to the court. He went to Florida. He didn't register at all, so he gets credit for that. So we're back to, does the clock just run, whether there's compliance with the registry scheme or not. So does this clock just run from the beginning, 10, 15, 25 years?
Doesn't he have to apply for the credit?
Well, that's exactly the point. That's what I was discussing with Justice DeWine. Justice DeWine said that does not apply. However, that's the only statute under Section 2950 that discusses anything about when and how the sheriff can credit an offender's out-of-state time. That's just the way.
So you disagree with Justice DeWine that applies to someone who has been convicted in another jurisdiction and then moves to Ohio?
That's exactly the way it was worded, Your Honor, in that it excludes everyone except Ohio offenders.
It says an offender or delinquent child who has been or is convicted, has pleaded or pleads guilty, or has been or is adjudicated a delinquent child in a court in another state, federal court, military court. Unless I'm missing something, the sequence doesn't seem to be set forth. Whether you're convicted in Ohio first or whether you're convicted in another jurisdiction first, if you've got that dual conviction, are you saying that the statute doesn't apply?
No, I'm saying that the statute specifically excludes Ohio offenders. And with that, that's the only mechanism to credit them from living anywhere or from their time anywhere else, because we're either A, left with the clock just running without any checks on it, or do they have to petition the court, or not the court, but the sheriff's department in the jurisdiction where they register, asking for this time out of state? Do they have to prove they've actually been registering out of state? Or if we adopt this expansive reading that the first has adopted, the clock just runs irregardless. There's no mechanism or no need for the sheriff's department to look if they've registered anywhere.
So you're saying even if he has the 10-year registration in Ohio, moves to Florida for 9 years, doesn't register, lives the life, maybe commits crime, maybe doesn't, then move back to Ohio, then...
Why would he be entitled to credit, Your Honor? I know I'm not supposed to ask you all questions, but why would he be entitled to credit for something he never did in another jurisdiction?
Well, but then again, if we look at the purpose of the registration statutes, mm-hmm. It's saying for 10 years, we want the citizens of Ohio to understand when sex offenders are living nearby or living in the particular county. Mm-hmm. If you're not living there, essentially, say, we don't care, because the statute is to protect our citizens in the state. If you're living in Kentucky or if you're living in Florida, then we aren't as concerned with your domicile because you're not here in Ohio.
But when they come back?
Then when you come back, do we then start, then technically, then you're living in Ohio for 10 years, does that make it a 20-year requirement of registration?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but it is a 10-year duty in Ohio because, as you all know, each state establishes their own duration mm-hmm. for offenders who reside in their jurisdiction. He has a 10-year duty in Ohio that has never been expended in any way, shape, or form. And if we take our hypothetical where the individual goes to another jurisdiction, as this person has now, going to a third jurisdiction with Florida.
Wait, I thought you said you had not established all this in the record.
It's a hypothetical, Your Honor.
Okay.
So I know it happened in this case, but hypothetically speaking, you take any individual with an Ohio conviction and they go to another jurisdiction and they don't comply with any registration requirements, why should they get credit against their Ohio duty to register?
Well, but
all that's passed. Well,
let me just ask you about the statute says, though.
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess your argument that he owes 10 years to Ohio and he's got to do that no matter if he's sent to another state. I'm not sure that's right or not. But what the statute says is that his duty to register, quote, commences regarding residence address on the date of the offender's release from confinement. So,
correct.
So he's got a duty that starts whatever day he's released. And that duty ends, and then another provision says it lasts 10. The duty to register is 10 years for him. So that duty ends in 10 years.
So
from the day he's released from confinement to until 10 years, there's nothing about tolling in the statute if you go move to another state.
And it's not about tolling; it's talking about compliance, Your Honor, and
okay,
a mechanism.
It seems like he's complied by the statute if he's registered for 10 years as a residence.
Well, Your Honor, that's
regardless of whether he's in Ohio or not.
That is the issue for the court.
Come back to Ohio and register somewhere else, or your time is told if you're not in Ohio. It just says your duty commences and ends in 10 years.
So that's it. If the court adopts that position, then the clock just runs. Compliance does not matter. That's where we're left. Compliance does not matter if we accept the proposition that the clock just runs.
Isn't Kentucky enforcing the compliance? If I understand correctly, Mr. Schilling's due obligation in Kentucky was strictly a result of his conviction in Ohio.
But that is only relating to his compliance with Kentucky law. It has nothing to do with Ohio law at all.
But for the conviction in Ohio, he would have no duty in Kentucky.
Correct. So he is complying specifically and totally only with Kentucky law.
And with that, could he comply with Ohio law?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, because it's a different... See,
no, what I'm saying is, could he comply with his 10-year registration requirement in Ohio if he lives in Kentucky?
No.
So it's impossible, living outside the jurisdiction.
Once you cross that river, the bridge going into Kentucky, everything about your requirements under Ohio law...
Is told?
It's not told. It just has stopped. Well, I guess you would call it told.
I was going to say, is there a difference?
There's no credit. In your view, there's no credit.
In my view, there is no credit because there is a statute that discusses when and where the sheriff, who monitors this through the BCI system, allows credit. But this is a Ohio 10-year duty because the requirements in another jurisdiction may not even be remotely close.
But isn't the practical effect of that is you could have somebody like Mr. Schilling who has a registration requirement who could never leave the state for 10 years because...
He only came back to try to tell Kentucky to lift his...
Well, but I'm just saying, let's just say he has a duty registration, he's served his time, he's had registration, you know, anytime he wants to take a vacation for, you know, if he's gone a week or a month or 2 months, all that time has to then be decompartmentalized, particularly if he moves to do a job somewhere for 6 months and his residence is not in Ohio, that's 6 months that then extends his registration time.
That's different issues. If you go, say, somebody picks up from Cincinnati and goes to Gatlinburg, and they're going to be in Tennessee for...
6 months, living there.
Well, they're going to have to register in Tennessee.
Okay, but
they're not registering
But they don't get any credit for Ohio.
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because they're not registering pursuant to Ohio law.
Okay.
They're registering in Tennessee pursuant to conviction. That's the distinction. Conviction, not registration scheme. They are not registering pursuant to Ohio Revised Code 2950. These are notices. It's a notice given to every offender in virtually every jurisdiction in the United States that if you go somewhere else, you're going to have to register.
So if he were placed on the interstate compact, let's say he didn't wait till his probation was over. Mm-hmm. If he were placed on the interstate compact, would that be enough of an indication that of compliance because he would have to be actually answering to a probation officer who would be enforcing Ohio's requirements?
They're not enforcing Ohio's requirements. The state of Kentucky, for example.
I'm talking about an interstate compact.
An interstate compact?
On probation.
Well, even that can differ on the cases I've dealt with on interstate transfers. Mm-hmm. For example, an interstate transfer may not necessarily come to the probation department. It may go to the parole department. Each will set up their own rules. So in essence, they are reporting to the jurisdiction where this transfer has occurred.
Thanks.
I don't think I have anything else. I think I've got 2 minutes. I forgot to say I'd like to reserve whatever's left. That's okay.
Well, you're already over.
Oh, I'm over?
2 minutes. No, that's the way it's read.
You realize I'm from Tennessee and I speak a little bit slower, so I should actually get some credit on this.
Well, I figured it was because you've dealt with these two.
There is that, Your Honor. Thank you all.
Thank you. Well, good morning, Mr. Hardwick.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. My friend on the other side is right. The clock just starts, and compliance doesn't matter. Compliance, at least for terms of the statute. Under the statute, under 2950.07a, when he left incarceration because he was probation. It started on the day of conviction. He's never been incarcerated for this. It runs for 10 years, and then it stops. There is a tolling event. It's if he gets incarcerated. This whole idea of credit, he's not entitled to credit because it never ran.
And that makes sense pursuant to the policy because this is the lowest form and presumably the least dangerous form of sex offender.
Yes, and also under Megan, this is a misdemeanor, Megan's law, this is misdemeanor, it is the lowest form. And it also, I think the state says that he owes the state 10 years. No, this is not punishment. Megan's Law is remediation. It's designed to protect the state for 10 years.
But my point is, if you left the state for, let's say, 7 years and then came back and would have to register for 10 years, that undermines, because that would be longer. And this particular registration is designed solely for the lowest tier sex offender.
Correct. And
undermines the policy of the entire registration scheme.
Yeah, the whole purpose is to protect people during the legislature. You made lots of policy arguments, that, and those are good for the legislature, to bring to the legislature, but the policy is to protect Ohioans, for, and the legislature determined for offenses like this, the term is 10 years, and the only time it stops is if he goes to, if he's incarcerated. I do want to correct one thing. There is evidence in the record in his amended motion to terminate that he was properly registering in Kentucky. No, so and that's not reasonably contested. So yes,
but
even.
But you don't think that matters, though? If he didn't register at all, his time would still be up.
Correct. If there's a noncompliance, that is an issue that can be, that is dealt with through failure to register charges, and that's a matter of Kentucky policy, of what Kentucky law would be.
So Ohio, he could not have non-registration in another jurisdiction work against him in Ohio?
Correct. Unless the state showed he was incarcerated for that, then it would toll for the period of incarceration. But not even if the state could prove it, it's irrelevant under state law. This is a remedial statute. It's not a criminal sentence. It is a remedial statute. It's designed to protect people for 10 years. It's a system of checks and balances.
As long as he's not residing in Ohio, the General Assembly of the law isn't concerned with his whereabouts.
Right, and if he moves to Kentucky, then that's the domain of the Kentucky General Assembly to decide what he owes to Kentucky, what he needs to do to protect the people of Kentucky.
Let me kind of move back. We've kind of skipped to the second part of the whole issue, but kind of the first part was whether or not these things are whether or not you have a race judicata problem because they're part of the sentence. And as you point out, that these, in this case, it doesn't look like it's part of the sentence. It just happens by operation of law. But we have other cases under Megan's Law. Where the judge will actually make classifications in juvenile offenders, for example, is the result different in those cases?
I don't think so. And I do want to step back. If there's a race judicata problem, there is no race judicata problem in this case because that's an affirmative defense that the state hasn't raised. So
the whole Henderson issue is kind of a race judicata issue, right?
Right. Yes. And I just want, in the extent it's race judicata, it doesn't apply here because the state hasn't raised the issue. But you are, I don't think it matters that the judge tried to put it in the entry, tried to make it a part of punishment, because part of Henderson is, do you have any authority to do it? And judges don't have power to impose sex offender.
Well, some parts of the statute they are required to. Sex offenders or juveniles, for example, the classification is required to be made by a judge. Do we have a different set of rules for those cases?
I want to be careful because I have not spent as much time working with the juvenile sex offender registration laws. I know those are significantly more complicated, and I can't speak specifically towards them because I just can't speak accurately about them. I can say that as a matter of good policy, this court has drawn a line in the sand that everyone understands. My side doesn't like it, my friend on the other side isn't entirely satisfied with it, but January 1st, 2008 is a line in the sand that we all understand. Our side tried to push back and tried to say, well, you repealed Megan's Law, so it doesn't count. We tried to argue, well, there's a difference between, for the year before that, this court said no. The state tried to push it back for some cases. If this court, people like Mr. Schilling and the sheriff's office and the AG's office all need to know what law applies. And the best way to do it is to affirm the law, the line in the sand, January 1st, 2008. Conduct before that, Adam Walsh, conduct before that, Megan's Law, conduct afterwards, Adam Walsh Act. If you go anything beyond that, it's confusion. This case shows part of the problem with it. The failure to register charge was 13 years after his after his time had run. They charged him with this. They charged him with failure to register after his time has run. And because of the way the system is set, there's a coercive power that if he wants to challenge that, if he's wrong, he probably has to go to prison, if the trial judge disagrees with him. And so that the state's, it's very easy for the state to coerce people into pleading to things that they're not guilty of, which is what happened in this case.
Counsel, did State versus Henderson blur or obliviate the line in the sand to the point where can an offender like Mr. Schilling now be subject to both registration schemes? The Adam Walsh Act, which happens by operation of law, in which you contend ends by operation of law of 10 years, but by his failing to appeal the erroneous sentence, also be a tier one sex offender and subject to that reporting scheme as well, in which case he may have a right to a petition in Ohio court to change that.
Well, no, because Adam Walsh Act by statute is notice. It's only has to be imposed by a judge as a matter of constitutional law because it's a punishment. But by statute, it's a notice, and the same notice that could be applied, and the trial court treated it that way. It said defendant notified, and then it said look on the other side for his actual sentence. That's what was written on the docket in this case. It said sentence over, and the other side is where they imposed the sentence. And under Adam Walsh Act, these notices can be given by police chiefs, they can be given by jail officials, wardens, sheriffs, and if something can be done by a sheriff, it's not a judgment. So that's not what happened here. And that's not what should happen by statute. And that's how this can be distinguished easily from Henderson and Harper, is that was about criminal judgments. And there again, and the only reason Adam Walsh Act is a constitutional sentence. It's a constitutional punishment, but it is not a statutory. And Harper and Henderson was about respecting the statutory authority of judges and the judgment entries of sentence, and that's just not what happened here. Unless this court has any other questions, I just want to end with, there is a specific tolling provision that doesn't apply here, and it ends. This whole thing for out-of-state offenders has no application here because the General Assembly had to figure a starting point for people with out-of-state convictions. They already wrote the starting point for people like Mr. Schilling. He spent his 10 years on the registry, and as he said in his motions, he wants a job. And because he's now being treated as Tier 3, as Adam Walsh Act improperly, any permanent person who employs him the employers get put on the registry. And imagine trying to get a job and saying, please hire me. By the way, everyone who lives around you is going to get notified that you're now on the registry with me. Congratulations. He's trying to move on with his life. He's trying to he committed a misdemeanor sex offense. He pled guilty to it. He's served his registration. He registered. The time has run, and it's time to let him get on with his life. And I'd ask that this court affirm the part of the Court of Appeals decision that said that tolling is absolutely irrelevant to this, and reverse the part that said that he's not a part of Megan's Law. And I thank the court for its time.
Thank you. Do you want a minute to respond to that? You don't have to, as you're thinking about it.
I mean,
it's up to you.
Your Honor, I think that I appreciate the extra minute. All I would say is, again, and this is clearly an issue, I think the first proposition of law is pretty straightforward. The second proposition of law is clearly a case of first impression. I mean, does the clock run unimpeded, compliant, or otherwise? So we believe that this is an Ohio duty and an Ohio duty alone. So with that, I appreciate it. I appreciate the time today. This is really cool being here, by the way. Just saying. I've tried to commit you all more, but, you know, this time it worked.
We're happy you enjoyed it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you for being here. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please close the court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.